hear NFL legends, players, coaches, and media members from around the country sharing their insights and stories with us year-round. Here on Thursday night, Tailgate.
All right, now back with us as a member of the Steelers Hall of Honor, and more importantly, a member of our guest Hall of Fame, that's Greg Lloyd. And as you guys know, Greg is my all-time favorite player. He is a guy who has been open, honest, and telling it like it is since the first time he joined us a little over 5 years ago. Let me remind you about his background. He is from Miami, Florida, played his college ball at Fort Valley State in South Georgia, where he was a three-time All-Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference selection. There he was a three-time team defensive MVP, and as a senior, he was the conference player of the year and a first-team Sheridan All-American. He was a sixth-round draft pick by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1987, and he played in the league from 87 to 1998, all in Pittsburgh except for his last season in Carolina. He was selected to five straight Pro Bowls from 1992 to 1996, and he was the AFC Defensive Player of the Year in 1994. He's a member of the Steelers all-time team, and like I mentioned, he was inducted into their Hall of Honor in 2020. And as I've said previously when Greg has joined us, sometimes in life when we get to meet our sports heroes, they aren't like we hoped they'd be. That's absolutely not the case with Greg. He's been fantastic every time we've had the privilege of having him on the show, and like I say, tonight is the 11th time. Each and every time, it's been a huge honor, and we're excited to have him back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Greg, Chris and Bob here. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Chris and Bob, how's it going, guys?
We're doing great, Greg. How are things with you?
Well, I tell you what, I've got a high handicap right now, which means I'm not playing enough golf. And I've got a freezer full of venison, which lets you know that I've been hunting well.
Well, one out of two ain't bad. So we just got to get you out on the golf course more often.
No doubt. No doubt. It's good to hear you guys again, man. Thanks for having me.
You too.
So, Greg, as you know, every time you come on the show, I've got my 95 jersey on. And I got to ask you, seeing guys on the Steelers, sporting the 95, guys like Jarvis Jones or right now Chris Wormley, I think if a player wants to wear 95, I think they should have to go through some sort of application process that gets submitted to you. And there's got to be a high level of play that has to come along with that request over a number of years before a 95 gets to be donned by anybody. Does it bother you at all that you see 95 running around out there and it's being worn by guys that aren't nearly as passionate or as good a player as you were?
Absolutely. Absolutely does. And, you know, I get it. And I know you guys understand everything behind it, but, I totally. I mean, that's probably why you'll never see anybody wear number 75. Not that I'm putting myself in that category, but you'll never see anybody wear number 75 for the Pittsburgh Steelers ever again. You'll probably never see anybody wear number 12 for the Pittsburgh Steelers ever again. And there's a reason behind it. And, you know, you guys are family. We talk so much and you guys are family. So this is exactly what my family says. When they look up in 1895, I always get a text and go, you know, I've always been called by my old name. Goes, Greg Lloyd, who's that wearing your jersey? No clue, because I'm not watching it, because whatever it is, whoever it is probably drunk. And that's kind of where, you know, I go with it. And I'm not saying whoever's wearing it not that, it's just that exactly what you said, that I said with a little bit more passion, you know, it's not the same. It's not the same to see 95. Running around out there, and he's not in somebody's face. He's not trying to, you know, get kicked out of the game or get thrown out of the game or make plays. I mean, you know, it's what it is. So it's a passion part. But I agree with you 100%. I think you guys said it, and I think you said it, you know, proper when you said that there should be an application, you know, to wear that number, or for that matter, any number that some guy has played and has, you know, adorned and, you know, has made a name for himself in it. I think it should be, you know, I think anybody who wears this number should, you know, definitely pre-qualify. Like going to buy a house, pre-qualify to win. So, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy to see. And, you know, in my mind, just like you guys, my family, mind, there's only one number 95 Pittsburgh. They always do that.
Greg, you were there in 1989 when the Steelers started off 0-2, and lost to the Browns and the Bengals by a combined score of 92-10. We just saw the Bengals embarrass the Steelers 41-10. How did you guys come back from those two losses?
Well, I think what, you know, I think I was talking to one of my teammates today. And one of the things that we always talk about back then, like now, you know, it applies to now. A full dog won't hunt. Full dog won't hunt. You know, but when you hungry dog, when you a hungry dog coming out of little old big two college, little old black college, nobody heard of, everybody making fun of, you're in military school and things of that nature. That dog hunt. He'll hunt every week. And he'll hunt every night if you let him, because you won't wear himself out. But a full dog won't hunt. There's been given to you, and you have so much. You have all the luxuries and all the, you know, all the things that you got, you know, that you want to have. What makes you want to go out there, you know, and do what you want to do? And that's in comparison, you know, to that. For us, it was as if nobody knew who we were. I mean, you know, I come in 1987, a sixth-round draft choice, like you say. You know, some of the guys were like, hey, where's full dog? Got a military school? Well, you know, that's enough to piss you off. And it's enough to say, okay, you know, you think I'm coming from military school? Okay, I tell you what. When we line up today, I want to make sure I line up on you. I'll make sure I give you a line. I'll make sure things will happen. Let you know that just because you went here, things will happen. So you don't have that. That doesn't happen. Guys come in and you're paying them good God your money. And like you say, they don't have to work for it. They don't go to training camp. There's nobody there, you know, that's a senior that comes in there and says, okay, you know, and I won't call it hazing for that way, you know, for the sake of the NFL. But there's no process of coming in and passing a test and making guys say, you know, okay, that guy is there to play. You know, he passed our code, he passed our test and practice. You know, we put him through the ringer. We know that he practiced, tested, which means now he's game ready. They don't do that anymore. You know, oh, this guy from the university of such place, and this guy from this university, all these big schools, oh man, he was all that in college. You know, like, be fair. That don't mean jack. You know, that was college. He's NFL now. Prove to me, right here on this field, right now, that you are worthy to show up on Sunday and do what you need to do. And it doesn't happen anymore. Everybody's just so happy. I'm just so happy that I driving my, you know, my Rolls Royce, and I thank God for my Bentley and my Lambo. And I don't care what they do over there. You know, I ain't running over there. You know, I'm on, you know, I got a contract coming up. That's what happened. And that's why, like you said, that's a poor dog. That poor dog, he ain't never going. He don't care that he leaves 41 to some garbage team with Scott on him and they call himself Bingo. He don't care. He don't care about that. 41 to nothing from Cincinnati Bengals. Cincinnati Bengals supposed to be a guarantee, two games that you guarantee you go to win. Cleveland Browns, two games you guarantee you go to win. Every year. But that's just how they are. There's no pride. And there's nobody there to jack somebody up, start a fight with them, and say, hey, listen, well, I will kick you know what, and I'm going to deal with this in practice. Nobody will do that because nobody has any kind of pride about themselves. And then there's no legacy being talked there. These guys come in and make all this freaking money, and they're out. They don't care. They're not worried about being in the ring of honor or the hall. They don't care about that. They're like, oh, I made, you know, $8,000 or $8 million, you know, hundreds of millions of million. I made millions of dollars. That's all they care about. And when it's all said and done, you know, 20 years from now, somebody go, yeah, you played for the Steelers? Oh, yeah, I was there. They're like, oh, okay. See, that's the difference. You know, when you have that legacy, people remember who you are. But when you got to tell somebody, to remind somebody, or show somebody a card or forgive you when you play for the team, anybody, you know, it's not the same. But that's the way we became. We just had enough pride to say, you know what? We're done. We're going to be those guys. Like, this is not going to happen. We, you know, I said, you know, most of the guys that I came in, think about our draft year. We had, what, Rod Woodson, Delton Hall, Thomas Everett, Clint Dale, Hardy Nickerson, and myself. I mean, that was the beginning of building the Steelers to come back to get to what happened in 2005, which should have took place in 1990 and 94, and probably 96 too. But, I mean, that was that. But it was a pride team. It was a team where we pushed each other, a team where you're my friend, but if you're not getting it done, I will tell you, and you got one or two things to do. Get your ass in gear, or you can get your ticket and get up in the stands and get your ticket and go home. Choose. Because this is how it's going to be. You know? There's no more of that. And so, therefore, there is no more pride. And I understand the game has changed, and there are all kinds of rules and things of that nature. But listen, man, you find a way. My thing is, you find it. I don't care. You sit in that room with each other, man. You speak with each other. You talk with each other. And you let each other know, this shit is not going down like this. And it doesn't happen anymore. These guys are such individuals. And back then, we were a team. And that's what it takes to get to that next level. And, you know, teams after us that went on to the Super Bowl, you talk to any of those guys, they'll tell you that's what they had. You know, and it's just a pride thing, especially in Pittsburgh. You know, such a blue-collar team, such a, you know, show up, man. You show up. Show up with your lunch pail. Show up bloody. Show up blue. Show up cold. Show up pissed off. And we might not win the game, but when you go home, you never going to come. You're going to be a hurry to get back. But you're never going to come back to Pittsburgh again. That's Pittsburgh football. Don't do it anymore, and I hate it.
To that end, Greg, this past week we heard Chase Claypool say, after the Steelers got their butts kicked by Cincinnati, that a good way to improve practice would be to play music so that it would be more fun. I can't imagine a second-year wide receiver back in the 90s making a statement like that and it sitting well with you. What are your thoughts on what you heard from Claypool?
Well, look, first of all, when we were playing, and I'm going to say this, and I said, if they step on somebody's toes, so be it. But my thing is this, when we were playing, first of all, wide receivers don't get to talk. You got to be able to produce. You don't get to talk. You know, 1 year, a couple of catches, somebody talks, telling you that you're going to be good. You don't get to talk. Okay? You got to prove to us that you're worthy. Just because you don't call a couple of passes and this and stuff like that, I mean, wide receivers been leaders on the team. Are you freaking kidding me? You know, it's like, you got to be kidding me. And 92, 3, 94, first of all, we had a garbage offense. Nobody came to watch our offense. People came to watch our defense. So you think about that. I mean, we had a no-name quarterback, you know, who showed up and showed who exactly who he was in the Super Bowl, you know, and things of that nature. That's what we had. People came to watch our offense. Now, that don't mean that our offense wasn't good. But they just, nobody cared about. We didn't care what our offense did. But at the same time, who gives a jack about, you know, I mean, this guy had to open his mouth and said something like that in practice or in the media or something like this. I could not wait to the next practice. There would be guys in my huddle saying, gee, don't do it. They go, gee, don't do it. He's going to catch a pass and everybody know what's going to happen. Everybody know what's going to happen. I'm trying to make him quit football. And so the thing was, if I'm doing that to my own teammate, imagine what I'm feeling about them guys over there that, you know, like you said, that are in my house. I mean, that's part of my family. You know, that's like brother's fight. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, you got a brother, you're a younger, older brother, you know what I'm talking about. You fight, but can't nobody else fight you. Can't nobody else. If somebody else try to fight your brother, what you going to do? You know you're in that, right? But you and your brother to fight, that's a part of a passing that test. I'm being told that's part of training. These kids, they got no business talking. Where are the leaders at on the team? You telling me that Pittsburgh defense, I mean, our team is defined by a wide receiver who says it'll be more fun? Who cares about fun? You have fun when you go win the Super Bowl. Have fun there. Have fun in the offseason when you don't, you know, even if you miss it. Have fun when you don't have a winning season and stuff like that. But you don't talk about coming to fight and have fun. You know? I mean, you know you have fun? You have fun on Sunday. Practice is like, when we practice is like, I think I heard my good friend John Cope saying in his speech, he had three games during the week. And that's how I felt. I could feel him when he was saying, there's three games during the week. There's a game on Wednesday, there's a game on Thursday, and unlike these guys who don't practice on Friday now, there's a game on Friday. So Friday we had one-on-one, one defense, one offense, short yards and goal line. Those were three games during the week. Sunday was he.
Yeah, Greg, it's great. Always great to speak with you. And when you came in the league, I mentioned some of these guys already. You know, you had young guys like yourself, Aaron Jones, Hardy Nickerson. Then you had some veterans like David Little, Brian Hinkle, and of course with Tony Dungy. It's a great crowd to be part of. Is there any one of those guys, Greg, that you think you learned the most from, or was it kind of a group effort at that time?
Well, I can tell you what, man, you met the great players there, you know, and, you know, of course you start with the head of all, Coach Dungy. Coach Dungy is one of those coaches, you know. I saw Coach Dungy when I was at my, I played in the Black College All-Star game in Washington, D.C. And he was, I did not know who he was, but I knew the scout, he was talking to Pittsburgh. I knew he just scouted me and he had talked. I didn't know he was the, you know, the D.C. Pittsburgh at the time. And then, of course, when, you know, once I got drafted by Pittsburgh and I come in, you know, I mean, you know, I came in with David Little. David Little was a general on the field, man. I mean, God rest his soul, he's a general. David Little taught me how to practice. Brian Hinkle to this day probably still ain't got the two friends, me being one of them. He's that kind of guy. He came in with the like of Lambert and Hammer and on those guys, you know, so they trained him. So he trained up. They taught me how to practice, how to study. Brian was quick to tell you if you screwed up in practice, hey man, rookie, get in your playbook. He said in a heartbeat. I mean, you'll be embarrassed. I mean, he's saying it out loud. He ain't saying it like whispering in your ear. You know, saying it, you know, once you get to the fire, like he said, you know, you need to get in your playbook. I mean, so, you know, who wants something, like, it's like your big brother. You don't want your big brother yelling at you like that in front of everybody. It's kind of embarrassing. So, yeah, I went through that, you know, with Robin Cole, you know, Mike Merriweather, you know, and guys like that. Those guys taught me how to practice. They taught me how to study film. And so we just passed it on. It's what happened, you know, when these guys kind of, you know, when they, you know, retired or they were cut for whatever reason. I mean, we had to pick it up. We had to pick up the slack. And we had to teach the next group of guys coming in, the Jason Gildens and, you know, and those guys that were back. We had to teach those guys how to do that. Then they had to teach the guys behind them, you know. And so it just kept going on. But it was how you practice. And like you said, Coach Dungy, he did it with a calmness, you know. I mean, with all chaos. What you see on television with Coach Dungy, man, it's Coach Dungy when he's coaching. I mean, he could get mad if you go, come on, fellas, we're so much better than that. You know, we got to play better than that. And, you know, for that. But you're not going to get a swearing out of him. You're not going to get him jumping up and down and calling you out. Man. That's just how you want to play for him. You know, so everybody has a different approach. You know, and there's some guys, you know, you say you take the difference with, you know, a guy like Bill Kyle who's in your face and sitting on everybody, you know, in the stands. And it's like, yeah. I can deal with that too because it makes you want to play. So, you know, just different personalities, but everybody's got the same thing in mind. We're going to practice a certain way. So when Sunday comes, we're ready. We're practice tested. So we've been game tested already. So let's go get it done. But, you know, how can you expect a guy to tackle when he don't practice tackle? How do you expect a guy to cover somebody when they don't practice cover? You know, they don't practice doing it as opposed to saying, this is my craft. And regardless of what the league has said, I'm going to find a way to get out and practice this. So come game time, you know, I'm here, people. I don't care. Find me. I wouldn't care. Find me. You're fine. But I tell you what, I'm going to be flying around here. And I'm going to be that person that, like you said, you know, I'm not going to be the weak link. Don't be the weak link. But yeah, man, those are some great guys, like you said, that we had to show us how to practice it, even on the opposite side of the ball. You know, I played against Mike Webster. I played against, in practice, John Stallworth. You know, I'm the greatest telemedian. You know, and stuff like that. But in, you know, their last years when they were playing, I mean, my rookie year, you know, Stallworth was still there, you know, and then you got the great Donnie Shell on defense. Donnie Shell was still playing. I got a chance to play with Torpedo, you know, coming in there, hit people with his eyes closed, you know, and stuff. So that was, you know, that was good, man. It was still part of the old regime who was teaching us how to practice and how to do things. And it was just a carryover. Now, you know, I don't know. I don't get it. But it's hard to watch. I know you guys are fans, but it's hard to watch. You know, I was there for the Detroit game, you know, the weekend for the Hall of Honor. And it was just like, are you freaking kidding me? It's like, This team hasn't won a game, and we are actually playing them like they are, like we're playing with them like they're the AFC Championship, like the AFC Championship game. And, you know, and Detroit is giving us the business that we can put one and two together. And it's just enough. So, again, that's where leadership has to come in. And, you know, you can't get it. you can't get it. And they're going to be like that for a while until they're going to have some skull testing where somebody's going to have to start calling some people out and telling some people that they're not what they think they are. And when they do that and guys start getting on their heels, it'll be good. But again, like I say, everybody's full, man. And you ain't got no hungry dogs over there. You just got a bunch of poor dogs laying around. Somebody keeps throwing them a bone. They'll never be able to.
And it's all related to my final question, Greg. I mean, you mentioned the intensity of practices and all that. And what you see right now is guys getting hurt more often than ever. Is that a combination of them not hitting during the week, their training methods? I guess it's a combination of everything, but it's like every other play, a guy is down.
Well, when you look at the league has said that they're going to take all the precautions to keep guys from getting hurt and just leave like what were you talking about? Has it happened? Has the way they've been practicing, not hitting so many days, it hasn't changed. They have just as many bad shoulders, bad knees, ankles, and things as they had when we were playing football. But the thing of it is, like you say, it's not so much that. It's like everybody's standing around. Half the guys are, you know, standing around. You got guys making $100 million when the play's not, you know, on their side. They're loafing. They're easing, you know, or walking, you know, kind of loafing toward the ball and stuff like that. And it's like, I sit and I watch it and I go, oh my gosh, nobody's trying to just coast the balls away from you. Nobody's trying to hurry up and get to the other side to try to make a play. What if he fumbles? What if he does anything? But that, you can't coach that. You either have that or you don't have. You know what I mean? I mean, a guy has to want to make a play, you know, regardless. You got to be relentless regardless. You know, you can't just make a play when it comes to your side. You got to be all over the place. So, you know, to answer your question, you know, I would say that, you know, they you're going to see a lot more injuries when you one of the things Coach Noel used to tell us, like, you know, keep your head on the swivel, don't stand around piles or things of that nature because other guys are coming. Right now, I mean, it's like, if you got two vehicles, one going 90 miles an hour and the other going 15 miles an hour, who you think going to receive, you know, the most damage? You know, the one that's going 15 and the one that's going, you know, 90. Some people go, depends on what side. Well, depends on what side. Fast is always going to get, you know, is going to be better than, you know, moving slow. You know, fast moving object as opposed to a slow moving object is always going to hurt a lot more. But again, guys don't understand it. They just don't have the pride about themselves. You know, my thing is, I didn't need Coach Noel or Marvin Lewis or any of my coaches to tell me to go hard. You know, in practice, they would pull me out of practice. I've heard them say, get him out of here, because I would come over and take stuff on the scout team because I was PO'd at the offense for what they did Sunday. And I would come over there to teach him a lesson. And I'm like, this is why we play the way we play. This is why people come to watch it. You guys can't block me. You're never going to be able to block those guys. So that's how we did. We did it in a way to make them, you know, you try to make them better, but at the same time, you want them best. I'm like, you know, if you can block me, you can block anybody else. But if you ain't blocking me, you're not going to block those guys. So that's a pride you have, Kevin. That's not being graduation, does not be an internet. It's just that you had that kind of pride. Like, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to show you guys that it's how practice should be. And guys will get mad. And like, oh, you're all pro practice guy. You're like, listen, okay, then you should be all pro practice guy. And, you know, y'all wouldn't get your butt kicked all the time. That's how I was. But you have a lot of that. And we had a lot of that. And it was done respectfully. And guys understood why it was being done. But nobody's willing to call anybody out. What do you think about it? If one of you guys was making $22 million and the other guy was making $2 million, $22 million guy kept screwing up. You know what you feel like, why should I say something to the guy? He should know better. But it doesn't matter. He's just a teammate. His money value that he has or what he's making doesn't matter. He's still just a teammate. And he has no more value on that team than anybody. And you should be able to stand up and say to him, dude, you're garbage right now. This is garbage that you're putting on right now. You get your you-know-what together. Like you said, go to the sideline or go up in the stand and get a ticket and watch it. Because that's what all of them have been doing. They've just been watching the game. And the game has passed them all by, you know. But it's been quite embarrassing. if I know anything about, you know, Coach T, he'll get him right. Might not be this year. May not be too late. You know, I don't know. But Coach T will get him right.
Greg, one more before we let you go. And I got to get you a thought on something you just mentioned a moment ago. When you have a number one draft pick that's out there playing, and he isn't playing up to the expectations that you have, he isn't tackling well, he isn't getting off blocks well, doesn't a head coach owe it to everybody on that 53-man roster to do something to make it better? Whether that's coach this guy up, and if he's not coaching him up and it's not showing in the game film, it's not showing in practice, don't you owe it to those other 52 guys to try something else, to try somebody else, to try to win a game that week? I mean, you mentioned playing with Mike Webster and John Stallworth. Not everybody on that roster has several more years for this thing to turn around with this one player. You got to try to win games now for those veterans who may not be around a couple of years from now. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you 1,000%. I totally agree with you 1,000%. I had this conversation again, I don't know if it was 2 days ago, a friend of mine. It's like, you know, and we're talking about teammates, and I don't mention names so that nobody can call somebody and tell them, you know, it's there, whatever. They call me all they want to. My thing is, you know, when you look at a short organization like Pittsburgh Steelers, what has happened so much with the kids is that, you know, the Steelers have always been an organization with the general manager. The coaching has a lot to do with, you know, coaching the players. The general managers on both teams are the ones who do the hiring and fire, that kind of thing. I think sometimes the coaches' hands get tied, because coaches want to get rid of players or want to set players down. But what happens is that you have somebody up in upper management and somebody's in the scout department is saying, hey, listen, we're paying this guy X amount of money, put him on the field. He needs to be out there on the field. And my thing again is, it kills everything that has to do with speed, because other guys, our teammates will sit there and say, this guy is really outplaying that guy. But they're going to keep putting this guy in. I had a similar situation when I was doing an internship at a team where they had drafted a high draft choice in a defensive back. And they had a free agent clearly outplaying him. But every day after practice, when the coaches were sitting meet, they were sitting there talking about, oh, this and oh, that, and, you know, and so, well, he got a guy to be paying this amount. And one day I just had to raise my hand. He's being there. I go, okay, can I ask a question? Are we trying to win? Or are we, you know, I said, you guys trying to win? Or are you guys concerned about hurting the scout's feeling? Are you concerned about hurting, you know, somebody's feeling who got it? And, you know, what I know about coaches and what I've known about Pittsburgh is that Coach Noel, when I first got there, he didn't care if you went to the community college or the pro. If you could play, you're going to play on Sunday, and he's going to expect you to play no different than you were Mike Webster or if you were Jack Lambert. That's how he expected you to play, you know? And Lord knows Steelers have had their first-round bust and choice, and we can name names all day long when it comes to that. But I agree with you guys. If a guy is getting it done, I don't care what choice it is. It's no different than all of us. When we make bad choices, bad investment, what do you do? You cut your loss. That's what you do. You cut your loss and you move on somewhere else. Why they do that, I don't know. Maybe Mike T's hands are tied. He's not like, you know, perhaps a guy over there, the guy over there in New England who can be head coach and general manager. You show up late, you can get off my field and don't come back or whatever. Mike T probably can't say that because he has to, you know, get it okay from the, you know, from the GM, because he's only the coach, not the GM and the coach, you know. So I get that. I don't let it stop there and say that, you know, he don't have to say so. But again, that's when players go to the coaches can play with. This guy's killing it. Why is this guy just, and when players start doing that and the coach can take that to the GM, say, players don't see it. I understand you guys. I understand how it goes. But like I said, it's a team killer. It's a team killer when you got a guy that's a high draft choice and he's just not getting it done. And you got somebody behind him that could possibly be doing things. Why not put that pick around in there? Let him get some work. What can he do any worse? Can
right.
he do any worse? So I agree with you 100%. Absolutely.
Well, Greg, we can't thank you enough for coming back and being a part of the show again tonight. I tell you, Bob and I, we can't figure out why you're not the linebackers coach or the defensive coordinator for the Steelers, because you're outstanding. We can't thank you enough for all the contributions you've made to the show over the years. It's an honor for us to have you as a member of our guest Hall of Fame. We hope you'll come back again soon and share more of your stories and insights with us.
Well, thanks, Bob. Thank you guys so much for having me, man. You guys do a great job. You guys been doing it for a long time. I know you guys have some great guests on here, you know, and everything, especially some of my teammates. And I just appreciate it. I appreciate you guys allowing me to come on and, you know, and just be me. You know, I think you guys understand the difference between, you know, guys that play and play with a passion and guys that play and play because of what's in their bank account. There's a big difference. There's a big difference.
There is. Yeah, yeah.
Greg, Merry Christmas to you and your family. We look forward to catching up with you again soon.
You be well.
No doubt, guys. Happy holidays to you guys, man. You guys be safe. And like you said, hopefully we can get this. I still bleed black and gold, man. It is what it is. That's how we feel, because we look up on TV. We like to see that black and gold shining. But when it don't, like you said, we have to call it what it is. You know, that's what family does. So in that regard, man, like you said, love you guys. You guys take care. Enjoy the holidays.
Thank you, Greg. Take care, my friend. That's the great Greg Lloyd. Bob, it just never, you know, from the passion that Greg brings every single time and tells it just like it is. And that's what we love about him. But I agree with everything that he said tonight. I think he's spot on. And I think that's what's lacking in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
The passion isn't there.
And that's a man whose passion knows no bounds, Chris. And he was at his best tonight. And every time he's on here, it's like a therapy session for him and a learning session for us. But it's just tremendous every time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to go from one passionate guy to a second passionate guy and another one of our TNT guest Hall of Famers, Vincy Glenn. We got Vincy hanging on the line. We're going to get to Vincy right on the other side of this real quick station break.